broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Wednesday morning, June the 28th, 2023, 16 minutes past the hour, and you are here on a special morning at WGH Talk. We have got a gentleman for two solid hours this morning live that I have been wanting to welcome back to the studio for probably, I think it's been 15 years since we've talked to him. How? No, Larry, we're going to be here for a while today.
Okay.
I got to say, it has been probably over 15 years since I've done an interview with him. We've had a lot of fun times over the years. I sat with a former governor, Governor Gilligan, years ago and did an interview. That was a lot of fun. Larry Barnett was an American League umpire from 1969 to 1999 and the supervisor of umpires from 2000 to 2001. Of course, he has done a lot of things for Prospect, Ohio. Many, many years you would see him over there cutting the grass in the Prospect Park. He still does work for them and has done a lot of work for veterans that you may not know about. We're going to talk about all that from birth till now today with one of the great people here in the Marion community, Larry Barnett. Larry, so good to see you.
Scott, so thank you so much for having me back. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. So, Larry, what's your life like today at 78 years old?
Well, every morning I get up, I shave, I shower, brush my teeth, and my day's downhill.
Downhill after that.
I enjoy my life. My life really isn't complicated. We have one grandson, he's 14 years old, and he occupies a lot of our time, and I like it that way. But no, it's life's simple.
Now, are you a good grandfather?
I spoil him. I think that's probably what I do the most. But he's a good young man, and that's what we try to do, just get him to grow up and be a good man when he grows up and be good to people.
Now, in society today, there's a lot of negative talk. People call each other names. There's just a lot of stuff going on. How do you instill in your grandchild to be a nice person?
We try not to do that. You know, I've probably been guilty of saying stuff that I shouldn't, but we try. We make an honest effort to don't do something that he could say, well, you did it, why can't I? We don't do that. So, and it seems to work. He's a good young man.
What do you make of society right now?
Scary. Some things are scary. I'm glad I'm 78, not 28. I don't know if I'd want to grow up in all this. It's different. It's just not... I don't know. Everyone's, like you say, they're mad at everyone else, and everyone wants to fight. And I remember Ernie Harwell, a great Hall of Famer from Detroit, said the only race in baseball is the race for the bag. And we should all feel like that.
When you look at the technology that has come in, what do you make of that? All the things kids have now, cell phones, laptops, computers...
Well, I know my grandson, I have a flip phone, and he can't figure out what that is because he has an iPhone. And he said to me, he said, Papa, he said, do you want me to show you how to text? I said, no, I don't want to know. If you want to talk to me, call me. So, no, I just haven't gotten into that world. I'm not a computer person.
So don't text Larry Barnett.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about. I wouldn't know how to do one.
Larry, I wanted to go back to the beginning here. I don't think people know your early life. Where and when were you born, and what was it like growing up?
Well, January 3rd, 1945, I was born in Nitro, West Virginia, on 34th Street in my aunt and uncle's house. I guess that's how they did it back then. And I believe we came to Ohio when I was maybe 6-7 years old, and I've been in Prospect ever since. And I graduated Elgin. Sharon, my wife, is from Elgin. Our two daughters graduated from Elgin. So we are Elgin Comets. But then after I got out of school in 1964, I went down to Florida to an umpire school. And at the end of the class, I graduated number one in my class. And I went 2 years in Class A Midwest League, 3 years in the Class AA Texas League, And then in my fifth year, I was a major league umpire at 24 years of age. And I stayed there until I was 54, retired from that, and was supervisor for a year and a half of all of Major League Baseball. And I really didn't enjoy that, so I quit that. So I haven't done anything with baseball since.
Now, when we look back, you lived in Prospect the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why did you stay there? A small community.
I don't know. I just liked it there. If you look at that little town of less than 1,000 people, Buck Rogers, Jerry Lane, myself, there's over 100 or close to 150 years of Major League experience from those three people. You've got Randy Mobley, who was the president of AAA Baseball forever. And you've got Brian Hagler, who was a WNBA coach of the year. I don't know how many world championships he won in the WNBA. From that little town of 1,000 people, there's that many people down there. And, you know, I always tell people it's the water of the Scioto that caused all that. But, no, it's a great little place to live. I enjoy it there. I'm comfortable there.
When you were traveling around, did you ever think, maybe I'll end up in Florida, maybe I'll end up in Arizona?
No, never did. I always told my wife, we were married on November 1st, 1970. I said November 2nd, we should have moved to Florida. We could have saved a fortune in income tax. Now, that wasn't meant to be. I'm happy in Prospect. Of course, my children today, I don't think they'd want to live in Prospect, but they were happy here when they grew up. It was a good base for them to grow up also.
Well, one of the greatest things is if nobody knows anything about Prospect, they do know that Larry Barnett lives in Prospect. How does it feel? Because you definitely are a celebrity there. How does that feel?
Well, it's nice. My job was different. It was different. It was unusual. It was the greatest job in the world. I had the best seat in the house, but I had to stand up. So I had the greatest job in the world. I couldn't, and I think baseball is the greatest sport in the world. I'm very prejudiced when I say that because I love baseball. So I was blessed to do something that I wanted to do for that many years, have that much fun, and we did okay. And I'm still doing okay.
Still doing okay.
So that's I'm blessed.
Now, when you're growing up, because I don't know too many people who say I'm going to be an umpire or I want to be an umpire. When did this become a thing for you?
I was sitting in the study hall over at Elgin. That's the first year we were in Elgin. I was the original class at Elgin to initiate the new school. I was a junior at Prospect and then went up there my senior year. And I was sitting in study hall reading the sporting news. It shows you what kind of a student I was. And I ran an ad to an umpire school, Al Summers Umpire School in Florida. And as a joke, clipped it out, sent it in, started receiving literature, and to the chagrin of my mother and father, who felt that I probably should have gone to school to make something of myself, I went out to Whirlpool and worked and got the money to go to umpire school. And at the age of 19, they took me down to Columbus, and I flew from Columbus to Daytona Beach. I had to make two stops to get to Atlanta, stayed overnight in Atlanta, never been away from home. The next morning, caught a flight out of Atlanta to Daytona Beach, and the rest is history. Now, people said, what were you doing during that whole time that you were on the plane? I said, I probably cried. I don't remember, but that wouldn't surprise me.
Now, did you ever want to play baseball?
Well, yeah, I played baseball at Elgin and Prospect, and I wasn't bad. I was a catcher. But, but I didn't have the athletic ability to do it.
So this was a way to get involved with Major League Baseball when you couldn't be a player.
Well, I had no idea what it involved. I didn't know anything about it. When I was growing up, I wanted to be a state highway patrolman. I guess I liked their uniforms. I just dreamed. I said, that's what I want to do. But then this came along, and I think I made the better choice. I had a very dear friend, was my best friend, really, in school, John Burcham. He was a tremendous athlete his whole life. And he became a trooper and was killed up on the turnpike. And I saw him. We were down at Prospect the other day, and I ran into his wife that he was killed. And he had a little guy that's Mike, has grown up now, and... But John never got to see him, so
Risky job.
Yeah.
Risky job.
Tough job. Tough job.
You know, it's interesting. Games go on all summer. Of course, the baseball season goes on. We see umpires, but I was thinking last night, do we really know what an umpire has to do, has to know to be a good umpire? You graduated first in your class, Larry. What does an umpire, what are the fundamentals they need?
Well, judgment. You got to have judgment.
Got to have judgment.
You got to have judgment. That's the, no one can give you that. Either you have that or you don't. And control yourself. It's a tough job at times. With Billy Martin and Earl Weaver, it's a tougher job. you know, it's just either. And I could go down to the umpire school when we were down there at that, and I could walk around. After missing the first couple of weeks, go down there and walk around. In a week's time, I can pick out the top 15 or 20 kids that's going to go on.
What are you looking at? What are you
how
seeing?
How they conduct themselves.
How they conduct themselves.
How you handle situations. Mm. That's the biggest thing.
Does an umpire ever make a wrong call?
Well, the last guy that was perfect, they crucified. None of us have been close. You make. It's not through the heart. You just don't see it right. It's just, and if you make a bad call and then you have to make another call to make up for that, then you've missed too.
Now, how many World Series did you do?
I did four World Series.
Four World Series. You're umpiring the World Series. Was there ever a time when you made a call? Now, not we're going to talk about 1975 during this interview.
I don't have any college of that.
We'll come back to 75.
That was when I made good. That was a good call.
We're going to talk about that because okay. I think setting the record straight on that is interesting. Yeah. But aside from that, was there ever a call you made in a World Series, but because of the advent of television, maybe you saw the game and said, well, I didn't get that one right.
No, I didn't. That's honest to God. I was lucky. I was fortunate. And sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. and there's a lot of pressure. I remember of the four World Series I had, you don't enjoy those. I mean, my family was there. I didn't enjoy them. I didn't enjoy the World Series. Because you've got things on your mind. And there's a tremendous amount of pressure. Because you don't want to be, you want to do the thing, have, you know, someone win, and you're not a part of it, or not even mentioned. That's what you want. That's what you set out to do. But that doesn't always work that way. But I know when Cleveland, my Sharon was a Cleveland Indian fan. Oh, Indians, I said Indians, I still call them that. And I always told her, I said, Cleveland will never be in the World Series as long as I'm alive. Well, when they won, it was against Miami, they played Miami in the World Series, I got she and her father, who was an Indian fan from the get-go. He would work in his tractor and listen to the radio, the Indians Herb score on the radio. And I got them tickets, and they went to the World Series by themselves. Mm. And I could have given him $20 million, and he wouldn't have been happier. Because he loved that.
What is it about baseball for you that makes it the greatest, best sport?
Well, I like the way it relates to the kids. And they're doing that now. They got away from that. But they're doing a lot of things now that are exciting people. Like the trip they just made over to London. I think that was a good idea. Last, they took it down to Mexico. Now they're going to go to Paris, I think. To put baseball out there internationally. They're trying to do that. And they're doing a lot of things in the inner cities for kids. Mm. And they should be doing more of that. They're doing good, but they should be doing more.
Why has football in ratings, money, overtaken baseball?
Well, they play just one game a week. Yeah. If they played seven games, they wouldn't do the winners. And football's a great game, don't get me wrong. I'm not beating on anyone. I just like baseball best, and I have reasons for doing that. Yeah. They're still paying me.
That's the best reason right there, Larry. When you are preparing for a game or a World Series, take me through a day of an umpire.
Well, my wife could always tell. Like when I did Cleveland, I drive back and forth to go to Cleveland just so I could be home. And I get back at 1 o'clock in the morning, and then this afternoon at about 2:30, I'd leave again for Cleveland. I did that the whole time we were in Cleveland. And I could get up in the morning. And she, before 15 minutes was gone, she said, you have the plate today, don't you? She always knew your focus. You focus to the job at hand.
How did you get that focus?
You just knew what you had to do and how you prepared yourself mentally to do that. And you just do it.
When you walk out on that field, the fans are there, the players are there, the managers are there. What's the atmosphere like?
Well, it's fantastic. Unless when you go out in Boston and it was me. I used to, on my crew, now during my 31 years of big leagues, I was a crew chief for 20. And so when we would go out on the field, and if I had a young kid on my crew, the other guys would tell him, said, oh, wait till they announce Larry's name. And they had announced my name, and those people up there would go crazy. But I don't know. I don't never pay much attention to that.
It seems like such a fun atmosphere to be around, as you say, that here we are. It's the World Series, or it's a day game in baseball. This is going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the seven-game aspect of it, you can come back tomorrow, unlike football, where either win or you lose. Now, tell me about the calls. Do you have to have a certain type of a voice to make these calls?
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, the Lucianos and the Dutch Rennerts were very loud umpiring, you know. I don't know. I never thought about that. I've never been asked that about your voice. You know, he's out. Lee Wire had a very high-pitched voice. Incidentally, he and Jimmy Evans and I are three that came up when we were 24 years of age. So, in fact, I had a Hertz rental car card, and I wasn't old enough to rent the car. You had to be 25. So,
when you're out there on the field and making the call, and it's a full count, are you focused more at that point than you would be on the first pitch?
First pitch is important. Second pitch is important. Third pitch. You're always focused. When you're working home play, you better be focused. You don't want to be picking your nose and looking for something else because you'll get in trouble. No, that's your focus. You got to be focused. That's your job.
Do you ever doubt yourself after you make the call?
Oh, I've had doubts. Of course you do. Yeah, you do. Yeah, and then when you miss a call, you don't like that.
Now, these are all judgment calls, really, in the end.
Yeah, but now you don't have that problem, missing calls, because you got the replay.
Yeah.
And I think that's good. I think that's very good. Now, I don't like the idea where they're going to maybe use a machine to do the strike zone. Because if the ball comes in and hits the knee, but it's a ball that lands in the dirt and the catcher dives to get it and the machine calls it a strike, they're not going to accept that either. I think leave that part of the game go. But I think the replay, that's, you know, they just go like that and you check it and boom, they make the call, the machine makes the call out of New York and you move on.
For somebody who doesn't know anything about baseball, what is the difference between a ball and a strike as you're standing behind that plate?
What's the zone that it's in? It's usually the top of the knee to just above the belt. Maybe a couple, three baseballs above the belt. You don't really go up to the armpits anymore. It used to be the armpits to the knees, but they won't accept that up there. So it's down. And the hollow of the knee is where the bottom part of the strike zone is. And then out over that plate, the front of the plate, you see that little box, you know? I'm glad we didn't have that thing when I was working.
It is a different world today.
Yeah,
it's
is.
A different. Do you like what's been done?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it speeding up the game. I really do. I know I sat with Mike Hargrove on the bench up in Cleveland one night during a rain delay. He and I were sitting out there talking. And he said, Larry, we're talking the length of the game. And he said, I don't care if this game lasts 6 hours as long as we win. And he said, furthermore, do you ever see the beer vendors complain about the game being too long?
They'll stay all night.
Yeah.
They'll stay all night. Yeah.
But we used to play a doubleheader with a half hour in between in 5 hours. You could play 2 9-inning games in with a half hour in between in 5 hours.
Is it physically exhausting to be an umpire?
Well, it's not an easy thing to do. I couldn't do it now. I see some of the guys that work into their 60s. I don't think I could do it now. I just talked to Jerry Lane. He He was from Prospect. He's over on a crew over in London. His crew is over there. And he's 64. And I told him, I said, Jerry, I don't think I could ride on the plane and do that.
The travel.
Yeah. That's not an easy thing to do.
What was the travel like in your day? A little different in those days.
Well, you know, 31 years, I never flew in coach. I never knew what was behind that curtain until I retired and had to buy my own ticket.
Then you end up in coach.
Coach. But, no, we had the best of everything.
During baseball season, how many days were you away from your family?
Most, when I first started, every day. Mm. During my 31-year career, I worked 4,281 games in 31 years. Jerry is in his 34th year, and I think he's worked 1,000 less games than I did. Mm. But they have, you every 6 weeks, 7 weeks, you have a week's off. Now, we had that the last probably 10 years of my career. But at the start of my career, we worked every day. We'd work 162 games or 170 games sometimes.
How is it decided which games you're going to umpire?
Well, you have a crew. Then it all comes out of New York. And they all bid that now. Like Jerry is the most senior umpire in baseball. So he had the first pick of the schedule. And that's how he got the London trip. Mm. They bid it. That's how they do it now.
How is it decided where you will umpire on the field?
Crew chief starts out the opening day behind the plate. Number two guys at first, the three guys at second, the four guys at third. Then you rotate. Third to second to first to home to third. That's how it goes.
Now, if somebody said to you today, Larry, they said, listen, we're having a charity baseball game. Could you come over for just even an inning and umpire it? No, you would not do it.
Absolutely not.
Those days have passed.
No. Why would I do that? What am I going to prove doing that? If I do a good job, I was a major league umpire for 31 years. If I screw something up, then I'm a real hero.
So you don't want to do that today.
I don't want to do that today.
Now, when you look back at the career, how would you describe it? You loved it, but did it take a toll? Family, life, all the whole?
Well, yeah. I mean, I have arthritis. This is all baseballs where baseballs have hit me. And that's now turned into arthritis. My balance is not good. I know I was going to get an electric bicycle a year ago. And I told Sharon, I said, I'm going to buy one of those electric bicycles. I think that'd be neat. She said, you're not going to get one of those. And I said, well, why not? She said, because you'll fall off it and break your hip, your head, or your neck. She said, if you want something, we'll get you a golf cart. So we went and bought me a golf cart, and it's got license on it, and I drive it all over Prospect.
Well, there you
go. It's got four wheels on it.
You're getting around over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, when you said, you're out, how what was your call? What did it sound like?
It's a, you're out! Yeah. Like that.
Yeah. Now, did you come up with that?
No, that was it.
You do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't sit and practice. The only thing you sit and do is some practice signing your name. Mm-hmm. How you're going to autograph your stuff. And I always sign my name that any you can read it. Right?
Yeah.
I remember we still get cards every month. People writing in wanting us to sign cards and stuff. And I got a card from a guy out in California, and he said, Dear Mr. Barnett, he said, I think you were the greatest umpire of all time. I knew he was a liar. No, I shouldn't say that. But he said, if you're still alive, would you please sign the four index cards and send them in a self-addressed stamped envelope back to me?
So you had to pay the postage?
No, it was self-addressed.
Oh, he already had it in there.
Self-addressed stamp. Okay. And so I signed him, and then I sent him a baseball card. He just signed, and they trade those.
Oh, how much memorabilia did you keep?
Oh, I got a lot of stuff. I have a lot of stuff.
Well, where would you like to see it end up?
I don't know. I try to tell my wife we should get rid of it because someone will take advantage of the kids. Mm. So I'm for selling it and giving it to them, you know.
What's your prize piece of what's number one? Memorabilia wise,
well, I had the lineup cards from the Ripken game when he broke Gehrig's record, and we gave those to Bowling Green, and they sold those, and we have a scholarship at Bowling Green. that the interest off that money goes to a kid's scholarship up at Bowling Green.
Now, I want to make sure I have this right, so I'm going to pick my paper up here, but you were the home plate umpire when Cal Ripken Jr. broke Lou Gehrig's consecutive games played record on September 6th, 1995.
I was the guy.
What was going on that day?
Oh, what wasn't going on? Yeah. I mean, there was probably 700 media people from around the country. Both the president and vice president were there. The Secret Service was stealing baseballs out of our dressing room. I remember that. Had a commemorative ball. A great, great group of people those guys are. What a job they do. But it was just that I know I met with the press, all the press, and I said, I can assure everyone, no matter what Cal Ripken says or does, he will not get ejected from the game. But it was a game. It was just, that was voted, I think, I might be wrong on this, the number one game in the history of baseball.
I would be surprised if it wasn't. And as it's happening, are you aware in the moment that this is history?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what happened. Al Clark was on my crew. Greg Kosk, Danny Morrison, we were together for a long time. And that was actually Al's game to work the plate. And he came to me and he said, Larry, you deserve this. He said, you bump ahead of me and you work that game. Mm. So Al Clark did that for me. So,
what did you say to Cal Ripken that day?
I shook hands with him. And I've really never done. They all do that now. I notice they shake hands with everyone. We never did that. But I did shake hands with him when he made the lap around. And I don't remember what I said. I think I said congratulations. But
what player did you have the best relationship with?
Oh, I had with a lot of them. Griffey Jr. was great. God, what a nice, nice young man. What a ball player. But his dad was, I had his dad in the 75 World Series with Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So then I had them in Seattle when they both were on the same team in the same outfield. What a thrill that's got to be for a father.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Yeah, I couldn't either.
Who, in your opinion, now that you're retired, is the greatest baseball player of all time?
Oh, man. Cheesy. That is such a... There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
I mean, Griffey.
Yeah.
If he would have stayed healthy, I thought he would have broke every record that the baseball had to offer. But he went to Cincinnati where he wanted to go, and he went, I think, for less money. And he got hurt. So, there's so many. Derek Jeter. Kirby Puckett. I mean, you know. Reggie was a great. He'd tell you he was, and he was.
And he was. Greatest manager.
Tom Kelly, Minnesota, was one of them. He just comes to mind right off the top. Weaver and Martin were nuts, but I thought they were nuts at the time, but they're sort of funny now. Mm. But they were part of the game.
When we look at baseball here in Ohio, we've got two major league teams, of course, the Reds in Cincinnati and the Guardians, formerly the Indians, up in Cleveland. Were you surprised with the name change of the Indians? Do you think that should have happened?
I have no idea about that. I don't know. I don't know if the Indians were mad, the Indian nation was mad. I don't know. Someone told me yesterday they were getting paid for that. I don't know if that's true. That was told to me yesterday, that they were getting paid, and now that they've stopped, they've lost their money.
Were you surprised of the backlash that got when they changed the name?
Yeah. Yeah, no. Going from to the Guardians?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't surprised.
Do you think the Guardians is a good name?
I'd have called them the Dobies.
Yeah.
Larry Doby was the first black player was in the American League, was with the Indians. That, to me, would have been a better name.
And, of course, the other big discussion in Ohio and all across, really, the United States is, should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame?
For what he did... Yeah, he should be in the Hall of Fame, but he won't get in.
Why do you think that? We've had different commissioners of baseball. They all meet with him.
Well, he's his own worst enemy. Every Hall of Fame game they have up there, when they have an injunction, I guess, and he's still doing, he goes up there and right in front of their nose, he's selling his autograph and doing everything. If he would have gone to Giamatti, and Giamatti loved Pete Rose, and he was a baseball purist, Bart Giamatti. If he would have gone to him and said, Mr. Commissioner, I've got a problem, and I need help. Can you help me? Baseball would have closed in around him. Now, this is what I feel. Baseball would have closed in around Pete. He would have gone away, and then he would have came back. The greatest basketball player of all time in the middle of his career went to play minor league baseball. What was that all about? There may be a parallel. I don't know.
Michael Jordan, you're talking
about. He did it the right way, didn't he?
He certainly did. Well, Pete Rose is an interesting case because earlier this year, sports gambling was made legal in Ohio, and the first person to cast a bet was Pete Rose. And at the time, we talked about it on the station, and I said, if this is a man who really wants to be in the Hall of Fame, this is probably not the thing to be doing.
Well, that's the only way they can punish him, is to keep him out of the Hall of Fame. And when he passes on, they may try to do it. If I was my family, I wouldn't want to let him do it then.
Now, you were in baseball at that time, umpiring, and obviously living in Ohio. How big a deal was that when that was going on?
Well, it was very big. It was very big. Every dressing room I've ever been in my life, the umpire rooms, and I know the Senate players also, is a big board and said, if you gamble in baseball, you're permanently ineligible from baseball. And it's in Spanish if you can't read it in English.
Well, what is the, a lot of people don't understand, what is the big sin in gambling in baseball?
Well, the Black Sox scandal. That's where it all originated from. And it all started when Chicago, they had people up there, Joe said, hey, so Joe, the man couldn't read. He was functionally illiterate. I think he just did an X to sign his name. And that's where it all started. And that was Landis. Judge Landis became commissioner, and he gave the edict to clean up baseball, and he did. And that's where that started, I think.
And forever it will be in Pete Rose's obituary, his history. I don't think he'll ever get away from it.
No, it's with him forever.
Do you agree with Pete Rose's lifestyle, as you say, that he shows up and always has autographs to sign wherever things are going on, and then turns around and says, why can't I get in the Hall of Fame? Yeah. Why can't I get back in baseball?
You can't. He's going to do what he wants to do, and that's his business. You know, it's not for me to sit and say, Pete, you should do this or do that, because number one, I know what he'd tell me to do, but he is what he is. And he'll have to live with that, too.
Yeah. What do you make of, it's better now, but the proliferation of steroids in baseball?
You don't hear much about that anymore.
No, thank goodness it's calmed down.
No, they check them now.
Well, what was going on when that whole scandal was going on?
You know, I didn't know anything about it. Honest to God, I didn't. But I know Mark McGwire, when he first came up, he's at first base, and he was just a normal-looking guy. Then over the years, his arms got bigger than his waist and his legs, and I didn't know anything about that stuff. I had heard when I first came up there were greenies, were pills you'd take to pep you up. That's the only thing I ever knew about, but I didn't know anything about steroids or drugs. They test us. I was one of the proponents of that in the umpires union to see that we were drug tested, because I did not want my children at home to think I was doing anything. So I demanded, and then we had that, and I think they still do that. They go in the dressing room now, and they check the umpires, and that's the way it should be.
Now, as you said earlier on in the interview, you became the supervisor of umpires 2000 to 2001. What was that like? Well, what did that job entail?
I don't know. It was all new, because they'd gone from the American and National League to Major League Baseball. And they put Sandy Alderson was in charge of that. Sandy wasn't, he'd been GM of the Oakland A's. He had a career in baseball. He was a soldier also. And I didn't really mind Sandy, but some of the people that he had working with him, I didn't really care for. But 'cause I remember when they umpired.
So this was, there was no real defined position to this job, defined job description?
Oh, well, you just, yeah, you had things you had to do or not do, and I don't know. I just, I did it for a year and a half, and then I got, said, I'm not going to do that anymore, and I just quit. And then they sent me a check like in August, and I put it in an envelope and sent it back to me. So that was the end of my career.
Now, you know, Larry, not to talk dollars and cents here, but the certainly pay for players has gone way up.
Oh, yeah.
Is this a good thing?
Why not? I remember when Al Kaline got $100,000 a year, and everyone said, that's the ruination of baseball. Well, they say this, oh, the guy from the Angels, the Japanese kid, what's his name?
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Otani, yeah, something, yeah, like, I can't pronounce his name. They say he could be the first billion-dollar player.
Well, I think the argument against it is that if a team generates more money or has an owner who has more money, they can get better players than a team who doesn't.
Well, the Mets owner, they say, is the wealthiest one of all. And he spent buku bucks, and I looked this morning, and they're 18 and a half games behind in their division. So that doesn't guarantee it.
No, no.
That doesn't guarantee it.
Now, does an umpire do well financially?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Umpires are making over $500,000 a year.
Wow.
So, yeah, I didn't do that, but, I mean, I was very comfortable.
Well, what would be the disparity from your day to now, pay-wise?
Mine was, my top was like right under $400,000 before I left.
Not bad, though.
No, I mean, no. You work 6 months a year? No, that's not bad.
What did you do during the offseason?
Nothing.
Relax.
Took the kids to school.
Yeah.
Drove them to school. They didn't have to ride the bus up to Elgin.
What was it like when you were umpiring and you would take the kids to school or run into people? Did people want to talk baseball with you?
Well, and the big thing we used to do, I was telling someone the other day, when the children were small, we did all of our shopping right here in Marion at the mall, downtown. There were some great stores here. And we would go through the mall at Christmas time, and it'd be packed, and everyone would say, hey, Larry, how you doing? I'd say, hey, good to see you. And my wife said, you have no idea who that is. I said, no, I don't know.
Well, it was, you know, for people who don't understand, back in those days, there were three channels, yeah, no cable television, yeah, no internet. So people knew everybody in these games when they watched them. They knew the umpires, they knew the players,
sure,
the managers.
Yeah.
It's different today.
Yeah, I guess it is. I don't know. Yeah. People still know who I am. I was riding through the park the other day. They've got the tournaments going on down there, and some people stood in my golf cart, and they stopped me, and they were having a reunion. They said, would you come over and say hello to our people? I want to introduce you to them. And I thought, well, Jesus. Yeah, that was good. That's fun. It's for an old guy, that peps you up a little bit.
Why did you leave baseball?
I just wanted to. I could have umpired. If I would have umpired 10 more years, the thing that Joe West just broke, I would have killed it long before he did. Because I was so young. And I would have only been 64, and that would have given me 41 years in Major League Baseball. I worked in four decades, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. And I'd have worked in 2000, that would have been the fifth decade. Mm.
What changed in baseball in your time there from the 60s to the early 2000s?
Well, everything. The money got better as far as umpiring, playing. Everything got better.
When you look at moments in baseball in general, we talk about the Cal Ripken moment earlier, but we have Hank Aaron during your time breaking Babe Ruth's record. Mm-hmm. A lot of things went on. Mm-hmm. What were those moments like?
Well, I didn't see that because that's National League.
Right.
And we're strictly American League. And that's one of the other things I retired probably too early for. I didn't want to stay in the American League. I was always proud of the fact that I was an American League umpire. I didn't want to be a Major League umpire. It's all the same, but it was just a little stupid thing, really.
Did you have a favorite team?
No. No. God, no. My favorite thing was the first of every month. That was payday.
That was payday.
No, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
The Yankees.
Yankees.
Hell, they won every year.
They certainly did.
You go to Yankee Stadium and make a call and 50,000 people want to kill you, they're no longer your favorite.
Oh, no, no. It's a whole different... Now that you are retired, do you have a favorite team?
Not really. I remember I told Sharon, I said, if they get into the World Series again, I'm going to go with you, and we're going to have a good time. And when the Cubs played, we had four tickets, one row off the field, down where the kid that's in left field, the ball kid, sits. That was our four tickets for the whole World Series. We went, and I had a good time. We went up for an 8 o'clock game. We left here at about, 10 o'clock in the morning. We spent the whole day in Cleveland just going around visiting people. I saw a lot of people that I hadn't seen for years, and I was down in the umpire's room, and I had a great time.
We covered that World Series, too, mm-hmm. on this station, and it was so interesting. You had then the Cleveland Indians, mm-hmm. Chicago Cubs. Mm-hmm. Neither team has won a World Series in forever. Cubs over 100 yeah. years. A lot of the games are happening up in Cleveland.
Yep.
Seven games. The yep. Cubs come back from a tremendous deficit. The last game goes into extra innings. Mm-hmm. What did that World Series do for baseball?
Everything like that. That's good. Like, that's positive. Everything's positive. And, that just adds, just keeps adding. I mean, the more World Series you have like that, the better it's for the game.
In your opinion, what happened there? The Indians had a tremendous lead. I think they were up 3-1 at the start of that. Ended up losing the next two. Went to Game 7.
Mm-hmm.
They got I believe the Cubs took the lead in Game 7. They got it back. They got the lead back. They go into Cubs, tie it up, extra innings. Mm-hmm. It's in Cleveland. They got the home field advantage, and they lose.
God was a Cub fan.
Must have been that day. And you know, it was so depressing for a lot of...
But that was a series. We sat with a lot of the Cub people up there, down where our tickets were. And they were nice. We had a nice time with all of them. You know, they were very nice.
Do you think the country wanted to see the Cubs win?
I don't think they would have been mad no matter who won.
Mm-hmm.
Because both of them hadn't been there, or hadn't done it, really, Cleveland for I don't know how long. But, yeah, I think they were happy the Cubs won.
Wrigley Field, of course, has a tremendous mystique to it. Did you have a favorite ball field?
I liked the old Tiger Stadium. Mm-hmm. That was a neat ballpark.
You talked about Ernie Harwell earlier. Did you spend a lot of time meeting or getting to know some of these great announcers?
Every game, Ernie Harwell would come into the dressing room. And he always wanted a new baseball. And he took a new baseball. What did he do with that? I don't know. Didn't ask him. He was a Hall of Famer.
He could do what he wants.
But a nice man. Never heard him beat on the umpires. Vin Scully was the same way.
Yeah. What do you make of people like Joe Nuxall and Red Barber, being a Yankees fan that you were?
Harry Carey, he was nuts.
did you meet up with Harry Carey?
Oh, I knew Harry.
Well, let's tell. Well. Give me a couple of Harrys.
Well, he would drink a beer every half inning, and we were watching.
Every half inning.
So every inning, he'd drink two beers, and we were doing the White Sox game, and the Cubs were in Los Angeles, and after the Cubs the White Sox game, I'm back and I'm watching the game. I turned WGN watching the game, and they're winning. The Cubs are winning. Into the bottom of the ninth inning, 2-1, okay? There's two outs, a guy hits the ball, they make an error. Now there's two guys on. The next guy up hits a home run. They beat the Cubs 3-2. And there's Harry, he said, the Cubs lose. Jesus Christ, the Cubs lose. I almost fell out of bed, but that was Harry.
He could get away with it.
Yeah. Probably just got shut off.
No. I knew what was coming, so I was ready for you, Larry.
Okay.
Now, but that's Harry Carey. Now, when he did the seventh inning stretch, came out and saying, take me out to the ball game, well, what was the atmosphere like?
Well, they loved it. People loved him. I went to Arizona for spring training since 1970 to 99. I didn't go to Florida. I went to Arizona. We'd run into the Cubbies out there all the time. The thing with the Cubbies, every time you had them, they were terrible most of the time. But she couldn't get to the game. It was a heck getting through the traffic. And I know my high school coach, Emil Rubich. He used to go to, when he retired from the school business, they used to go to spring training with us every year. And I introduced him. I said, Harry, I want you to meet my high school coach, Emil Rubich. He said, oh, Emil Rubich, what a great name. What a great, I bet you were a great coach.
Well, we are having a lot of fun here this morning with former Major League umpire Larry Barnett. And guess what? We're only halfway done here. See, Larry, the time's flying right by here.
When you're having fun.
We're going to take a 15-minute break, go out and get some orange juice, have a little breakfast here, and we're going to come back with Larry Barnett. We're going to talk about his work with the veterans. We haven't got there yet. Maybe some more stories from Major League Baseball. And we are going to go to Game 3, 1975, the World Series. A call that was made that brought a lot of people, well, we'll just talk about it when we come back after this break.
And their sisters along the route just waving and having such a good time celebrating.
WWGH Radio, streaming live on the internet at WWGH 107.